Alright guys, good evening. How's it going?
Good.
Alright, so let's continue class number 3. And I have seen some homework from some of you. But not all guys have sent me.
But,
don't be like this guy.
Yeah, excuse me. When I try to connect to this port, my home is not delayed or not connected for waiting time.
Yes. Yeah, send me next time email, we'll figure out.
Yeah.
So who couldn't connect to the site? Can you raise your hand?
Science, okay. Mine is different one.
Huh? The one that is in homework. So one person, who else?
Oh, the site?
Yeah, the site. Okay, so ping me next time, maybe something local,
okay.
Some issue for you. But anyways, so just to summarize, so what is the tool set that we need to learn to be successful automation engineers? So first of all, as you know, if you have basic HTML knowledge, that's definitely a plus for you. And that's something that would help you to navigate through the elements and figure out quickly what's the container element, how I figure out like where, what's the area I'm looking in for verification. Now, of course, you should know some dev console. We use example as Chrome DevTools, but that's something that you should make sure you're comfortable with. So we chose XPath as a universal way to select elements because XPath is something that gives more opportunities than anything else out there, and it's in real situation, that's the only way to select and work with elements. So by the way, what's the difference XPath has, what's advantage it has over CSS?
Selection by text.
Yeah, selection by text, it's one of the cases. Now, do you need to use XPath, let's say if there's ID or there's a name?
No.
Technically you don't need to, but it's really easy to switch back to it. For now, I would like you to use XPath, even if it's ID, if it's name. So you can use any other attribute the same way. And you can use anything more complicated. And you already figured out, I think, some of you who did some advanced stuff from homework, you know that just simple ID name, it's not enough. Now, we use RubyMine as integrated development environment. Can you use just Eclipse? Yeah, you can use it. But for Eclipse, it's a bit slower and it requires some plugins and it's not really used much in commercial companies. Like if you take startup, they have like millions of funding. So they don't care like extra 200 per person. Okay, like they, let's say have 30 people. They pay 100,000 each a year. So if they pay like 250 a year, that's nothing for companies. So don't like think, well, it's paid software, it's not going to be used or something. And we already have the address, so you can see here. You can use it in the school and up to 2 days beyond the school. Then you should start evaluation period and you should apply for a free license based on instruction I've sent you. So then you get it and you get it for a few months. Then you can prolong it as long as you're learning. Okay? Start working, you use company's software, so that's okay. You can also, by the way, reset the evaluation period. Some guys who like tried in the past and have some issues can stop by. I can help you. Now, Cucumber is you're using as behavior-driven development example. There are a few others available, but Cucumber is just one of the most easiest ones. I'll show about it and I'll talk about this specifically. So why is it easier than other options? There's other BDD examples and TDD also. So TDD, test-driven development. BDD is behavior-driven development. So in my mind, Cucumber is one of the best out there available. And it's more and more adoption on the market for it. So even the functional QA engineers require to know Cucumber today, even there is no automation. Like I've seen companies switching just using Cucumber, even there is no automation plan today, maybe tomorrow. So I'll talk about it in detail a bit further. And you're going to use Ruby as programming language. So we'll see if you have time today, you're going to start it. If not, then we'll continue the next lesson. Ruby is just the most easiest one out of all. Python is more complicated, more kind of tricks. Ruby also has a bit of specifics about it, but Ruby is much, much more easy to learn for beginner. And majority of stuff you're going to do with Ruby is just really simple. It's a really forgiving language. I'll teach you some, because Ruby allows like way number A, way number B, way number C. So it allows all the approaches. And I'll show you approach like Java Python-like approach. So if at least you can learn it. It's good for Ruby, but it's also going to be good in Java or Python or whatever else you can switch. Okay. So I'll try to show you some syntax closer to other languages, maybe Scala, maybe Kotlin, whatever. So there's so many languages today. But on the market, Ruby is just much less represented. So you have less competition if you go, especially as automation engineers. And I can say, like, if you build in Java the framework or in Ruby, it's just much faster to do in Ruby. So a lot of companies make a call to use Ruby for automation, even that they have Java or Scala as a main development, or JavaScript, yeah, not JS, as a main development language. Any questions? All right. So now, for WebDriver, of course, it's something that's a basis you're going to use. I'll show you also, there's, for Ruby, there's specifics. There's a couple of more items available only for Ruby. It's a water and a capybara. So it's basically both of them are kind of, water is kind of separate framework, which is not much popular because it's only Ruby. Capybara is also Ruby specific, but it's kind of extension of WebDriver. So if you know, so capybara can use all of WebDriver plus something else. Okay, so I'll show you some examples as we go with those frameworks. All right, so now there's one addition for XPath. I just want to highlight because I've seen some homework you guys have sent me. And it's right there. So it's a selection by index. So let me give you an example. For example, you have a field. So you have required, right? You all have done it. Let's say you have, so again, how do I switch to dev mode for browser? Right-click anywhere. Let's say I'm interested in the password. So I can right-click on password, so it will be highlighted first. So I right-click and inspect. And then, like as I see the screen, I can switch to, in this case, ProPath. Right? Now, I really recommend you to switch to rel XPath. Also, although that it's not necessary, because it's all displayed here. You can copy from here. But if you switch, it just be much easier, it will show right away in here. Okay? So, okay, let's say assume you just go with required fields, just say add required, so there's five of them. In some situations, if you need the first to be selected, so how do you do the first? I apply so-called index. Yeah? But index of four XPath doesn't start from zero as in all most of the programming languages. Just keep in mind, it starts from one, doesn't start from zero. So you want a first element, you just do like one, and just see that. It might work for some cases, like for example, if I just do input, it might work if you just add it then. But to make sure it always works in all the cases, recommendation to put everything else in parentheses. Let's say I have a really complicated long and XPath here. Let's say I have a pretty complicated XPath here. So what I do is, before I add index, I just take it in the parentheses, everything, okay? And then I apply index at the end, just like this. Then I only have one element selected. So it's more like corner case, it's not every day you go for it, but sometimes it's more like an escape, you know? Sometimes that's the only way to go with some cases. Again, I would really, really not recommend going with indexes. But sometimes, I just give you an example, like recruit site. You open the requisition, you'll go with the details, you need to apply for a position. There's automation scenario. Actually, that's one of the scenarios. I just looked actually last week. One guy applied for position and he like had three coding challenges. So one of the challenges was to go to the real site, apply for position, just have to meet some of it, like use LinkedIn integration and verify something. It's a really simple scenario, but it involved like two, three sites to work with. And it required some indexes like this. So that's why I added it, because sometimes you have to know it. So it's like you have two buttons, apply, you know, on top and at the bottom. And they're exactly the same, right? So sometimes like you have at the bottom and at the top. In that case, you're okay to use index in those situations. Make sense? So how do you apply index? Just take everything, like whatever you have, if it's several, just take in parentheses and apply like 1, 2, 3, whatever you like. Normally you always use 1 because like it's just example that you can go with whatever. But normally you go with first one because you never know which position it's going to be tomorrow, right? So just as long as it's first, because if you rely it's going to be third from the top, it's not going to work the same way tomorrow, most likely. But if it's always the same number of elements, all visible, then you can go for it. Okay? So sometimes there's a, you'll see later, there's expat element and one is visible, one is not. So in this case, you can easily go through the code. You can work through this in the code. You can easily check, okay, let's say get two elements and just whatever visible interact with it. Ignore non-visible. Some cases, like corner cases, might be like this as well. Okay? Yeah, that's the only addition here. Everything else. Any questions about this? Are we good? Okay. So, let's see. By the way, guys, you did a very good job on installation. It was very fast. Especially, I know Windows was more complicated. So, I have a good feeling that we're going to go further than usual. So what we have done basically is just high level, so you know there's a two different ways to install application for Mac and for Windows. So for Mac, it's pretty simple. So there's a whole so-called homebrew, and you just install it. It's basically a package manager. So once you have it, the best way to use Ruby on Mac, because on Mac, Mac already has Ruby built in, but Ruby on Mac requires a root, like sudo access, which is not the ideal way. So plus it only has like 2.0 or something. But what we need to do is we use the latest stable, which is 2.4.4 for us. So that's why we get Ruby version manager. And it's basically just one command to run. And then install it after. So that's it. So that's how you have Ruby, everything you need on Mac. There's another case we actually used source control. I didn't pay attention much about it last lesson. But we use source control. We all got the code from GitHub. That's also a good skill to know, and I'll highlight it a little bit. Because at the interview, some people just fail because they say, oh, yeah, I worked on the code, I did everything. Okay, what source control did you use? Well, you know, it's like Git or SysVN, you should know. That's one of two. SysVN is very simple, Git is a bit more complicated. Most popular is Git. I'll give you some exercises at the end of the class, just practice a couple of things. All right. Yeah, so that's it. So that's installation for Mac. I think it takes about like 15 minutes or so. For Windows, it's very similar, but it's just more steps. So it's, you just get the installer, like not in, through the homebrew, but there is a direct download, and just install it. And while it installs, it goes to the internet, installs some more stuff, installs some more. Most of the cases, it just needs some dev tools for us. It's like if you heard like GRE, Java Runtime Environment, and there's also JDK, Java Development Kit. So as a developer, automation engineer, you need development kits. That's how you get development kit for Ruby, same way. It's called like MCS2. And it just takes more time, but it's essentially the same. On Mac, you have Git pre-installed with Apple. It's already there, built in, same as Ruby. On Windows, you have to get it and install it. So that's this step, we install Git, and we restart the computer. So that's the difference. In the first way, it takes 15 minutes. This takes, I think, 1 hour. Okay. Depends on network speed also. And then this next steps are the same. So we get the Ruby. Now we go with installation of integrated development environment. In our case, Ruby Mine. So we just get it. Again, we don't get. You can experiment to get the latest, but I know at least one bug in the latest one, so that's why I don't use it. The latest is 1.18 I think 0.2 or something. I don't recommend use it because it's a just small bug. It doesn't break error. It's a block, not blocker. But why use buggy version that if they're the stable, the same functionality? Okay. So, and essentially once we have a Ruby mine and the Ruby itself, we just now get the code, baseline of our framework. And that's the URL that we use GitHub. Just it's basically the code base is at this source control and we just clone it. Clone means copy it to our computers. There's a specific git command that just copies whatever out there locally to your machine. That's the first command that developers and automation engineers use to get the code. That's it. So then we open it. It kind of scans it a bit. We define, okay, for this project, I'm going to use which version of Ruby, because you might have five versions of Ruby locally. So you can define for this project, you're going to use which version of Ruby. And we use the same as we installed, 2.4.4. Even that you might have a lot of other versions, it can give specific context just for this one. Okay? And then, okay, you have now, like, just to commit it a bit, right? So you have, first of all, Ruby itself. That's the first step. Then you have IDE. Yeah? Those two allow you to work. So now you can go and get the code to work it. Get the code now. And for this code, it's basically project. Right? Project. So for project, you need to say, okay, which Ruby to use? So you say like 2.4.4 in our case. You need to define it once you open it. And now for this version, you have to have libraries. The way it works that, let's say you need WebDriver library. Yeah? So you install specific version for this version of Ruby. If you have version, let's say 2.0, it will have its own libraries. It's different ones. But sometimes on the latest Ruby, the library might not work. Ruby is okay, but some library is buggy just on that version. That's why like it's another experiment to use the latest always. Otherwise, you just do exit tests for the company. Because it's like, normally it anonymously reports some crashes, whatever. So that's what we have here. So we install JEPs for this version. So it normally detects automatically. I'll show it how it's done. And that's it. So then we just launch the test, and it works pretty well. But and for those of you who hasn't installed license, that's the way to request. Reach out to me if you have any questions on the issues here. Are we good? Okay. So let's talk about the library, actually the framework that we have. Like I did some highlights. So let's explain how this works. So yeah, by the way, I have this nice summary here. So I have Ruby Mine, and that's what is on the center of it, right? And it uses Ruby. They both work together, and they have specific libraries that you work with. So you have the, that's like your word processor. That's the, like language you write in. Yeah, like font, if you like. And I was like, actually, that's a language and that's fonts. You can think about it this way. So you have Ruby. The DevKit, they come together now. In the past, you have to install separately. Now they come together. And you have a lot of gems, such as Cucumber, Selenium WebDriver, Test Unit, you need mail, you have email, and so on and so forth. Okay? So let's take a look. So what do we exactly have? If you don't have it open, please open RubyMine on your machines. So make sure you have this license, if you have issues with the licensing. So basically, let me show you. Okay. So when you just open it, you'll see something like this, some kind of structure like this. So it's a Ruby WebDriver Cucumber name of your folder, and it has a few folders. So folder drivers It just has some driver. In our case, it supports one driver for Windows, one driver for Mac and Linux. So, like Hugendel, what's the driver? What is the driver? Chrome driver. Okay, so what is it? What is the
driver?
Set of functions. So it's actually binary. It's a binary. So the functions, if you kind of decompile it, but it's like, what is the purpose of it? What's the purpose of a binary? It's a driver. So you have a code, right? And then you have a browser. Yeah, so browser does not understand your code. Some translator should be there, okay? So what is the driver role is basically like a robot, like a human robot. So it basically plays a role of human, and it reads those commands and executes them. Okay, so it's like, because it simulates real physical push of mouse or type in a keyboard or like mouse over. So its role is to represent a person, which just does something. So it's like a robot, like it, right? So like kind of, it's a kind of AI, but just does whatever you say. It's like you write, like for this robot, you write the command, but actual driver implements it. Okay, so that's what it's for. And as you know, so do browsers update or not? All the time, yeah? So that's why, do you need to update driver once in a while? Yes or no?
Yes.
You have to, right? So once in a while, you have to update this guy, normally once per quarter, like a few times, like maybe twice a year, maybe four times a year, depends. Because Chrome is updating automatically. Sometimes something might stop working. Say if you open this project in like 1 year from now, it might not work because, but to make it work, you just need to update the driver. That's it. So don't like get lost it. Because some people contact me and say, oh, like nothing working. Just to get the latest, and I'll show you later how like to update is really simple. Actually, the way to update it, just open the Chrome, right? And say Chrome driver download. That's it. And the first link it will give you is this guy, which will contain this driver exactly.
And there is no dependency with Ruby version, with something other versions?
Yeah, I'll talk about it. Yeah, the question is, are there any dependencies with Ruby version? Of course there is, there are. But normally they're not outdated as fast as driver. Yes. So they get outdated, but not as fast. So, well, yeah, you just get it and just put new one, that's it. Now, that's the driver, so basically that's the way it works. Now let's take a look at what else is here. Here there's a license, and so here what's important is it's called gem file. So like for example, we have, like this is basis we have. I'll be adding more gems as we go later. And the way this works is it's called gem file. So what's the library in Ruby? How is it called? It's gem, just library, just cool name for it. So the way you define it, okay, you can install all the libraries or gems through the terminal. You can open terminal, command prompt, just type command like gem install name and version. Every single one you have to do this. Okay. Maybe let's say if you install some version like this, it'll say, oh, it depends on 20 other libraries. You have to go and install 20 other libraries before you install WebDriver, for example. Like Selenium Cucumber, we use it, also requires Appium. And you have to install Appium for this to work. So it's really redundant, a lot of work. So it's all automated. So what this is doing is, so it's a gem file, it's a specific configuration file, which contains, just you put all the libraries you need there. And it automatically downloads all of them for you and installs in your project. So it's like if you worked on Java, it's like Maven. But Maven is bigger, Maven can also run the project. But it also can download libraries, dependencies. This just can download dependencies for project. Okay? So, and the way you do it, so source is where to get it from, so Ruby gems, basic URL, so you don't touch this. Just say gem, whatever name, equals, if you know the version, you put the version. Otherwise, it gets the latest. And how does it work? So there's a specific library for it that does it. And the library called Bundler. So for this to work, you have to have Bundler on your machine. So that's why it's right there at the top, the latest, no version. Because the latest should work with the latest version of this guy. So that's why, like, if you remember, initially it says install, and it says, like, bundle install or something, some command. So you can run exactly bundle install command on the terminal. But the IDE role is to make life simpler for you, so basically does it for you. Okay? And you don't need any parameters, just bundle install. There's a like pop-up and just installs everything for you. Make sense? So it's, and you just say what version. So now, normally these combinations of versions are done by senior automation engineers. So they figure out how this works, and they just combine it so they work nicely. Normally you have bigger list of libraries. And we, as we go, might add more in this list. Like for example, if you want to work with spreadsheets, let's say you want to load all the data from Excel document. You can just add spreadsheet library here and just use it pretty nicely to upload, like to read and write into Excel document, like OpenOffice format. Okay, so that's easy to do this way. So normally versions are done, and let's say there's tomorrow a new version comes out. Let's say there's cucumber 4, but it still gets this one because all of them they should work together. Let's say Selenium WebDriver would not understand 4, or more, maybe IDE would not understand number 4 also. It needs also to be updated. So you have to update this guy in order to, so it can run and work with latest libraries. So it's all cross-dependent. That's why it's important to have some versions here defined, as long as you know what is effective and what's working. Okay, so if you have time, I'll look into like installation of the project. It'll just do a simple project from scratch. And you'll figure out. So normally you put everything is with no versions. You install it, make sure it's working. Good. Then you look up what did it download. You just put it here. So I need to get the latest for you, whatever. So normally the latest today available that can work all together. So that's what is today. Okay. There's one thing that I think a question was asked here, like, okay, how about Ruby itself and all these libraries and stuff? Like, yeah, there's dependency on it as well. But it's not as often. So let's say in 2 years from now, you have to upload this guy. Okay, now to work with this web driver, you have to also have latest web driver. Maybe this version would not understand anymore. It's supposed to understand it. It's supposed to be backwards compatible, but sometimes it's not, right, in reality. Normally it's not happening like every month or every quarter. It might happen once in a while, like once a year, once per 2 years. Okay, and then you have to get, let's say, version 4. Well, if you get version 4 here, then Cucumber might not work with it, so now you need to update to Cucumber also. Okay, now you have the Cucumber, the test unit also should be updated. So that's how it works normally, like you just like play domino like this and make sure it's working. So normally updates are done by senior automation engineers, so it's not for you beginners, so you don't need to worry about it. You set up initial project and it's good for a couple of years, so as long as you update the driver itself. Again, but if you, let's say, somehow it's not working, it's easy to just remove all the versions, install gems, see what's working, record those versions, and make sure it's here. You don't want gems to be updated every day. The same way, not all of them stable. So you don't want like all of them updated every day, and you'll have some bricks that you have no idea why they happen. It's will be unstable, kind of introduces instability. So that's why you do it in a controlled environment. Any questions? Okay, so those are the libraries. There's also so-called like cucumber.yaml, very simple. It's just a configuration that cucumber requires if you run cron prompt. So I'll show you later. It's actually needed for Jenkins integration. So you have continuous integration, Bamboo. When you need some kind of continuous integration server to run your project, because you don't run every time like by demand. Actually 6 years ago, we had engineers said, okay, I'll run this at home, you know. What should I run? Regression? Okay, tomorrow I'll let you know. Yeah. And they just run at home for their computers, like 7 years ago. Today it's not acceptable, so there is no more easy things like this anymore. So everything run by specific server kind of orchestration. It's all reports, every single run, visible for everyone in form of reports. Okay, that's, by the way, one of the advantages of Cucumber. This Cucumber can generate this report for you for free. Like JUnit is not really nice reports. RSpec, kind of hard to read them. I don't like those. So Cucumber is much more nice and user-friendly from that perspective. And that's just, what is how to read it? You don't normally touch it, but what it says is, okay, I have feature folder, so this name of features is not from top of the head. You define it here, that's where my features are. recursively. Okay? And then you define like what, how, if the result, what format should it create? Like as a result of it, what should it do? It generates HTML for you. That's what we read every time after run. It gives you result HTML. That's where it takes it from. So then you basically have report in this format, and then you save it in result.html. Make sense? It's like later when we integrate with Jenkins, there are some plugins in Jenkins, very nice, that can read JSON format as output, and they kind of nicely show its very, very good reports. A question?
Yeah, what is the format really?
Pretty, format. Just nice format, pretty format. It's like, if you don't have it, still be nice, but it's just the way you organize the format, like, opens and closes, like, you know, can click on it, it's like, expands, it just, that's it. But yeah, that's pretty much it. So you say, okay, where do my file field features? Right there. Format HTML, that's saving the file every time. That's it. So that's our cucumber, and then what else do we have? So we have output, just a folder where every time it runs, it puts result. Okay, so that's pretty much it. You have looked already at it. You can always right-click, and you can say open browser and select browser. Okay, or you can just right-click and say reveal in Finder or open in Explorer, I think on Windows. So just directly physically you can open the file like this. Okay, that's it. So and then finally there's a features folder. So what features is about? So features is, okay, I have some long screenshot deleted. So features folder, it's basically, there, everything is out there, okay? So you have a few folders that sub features. So pages for now empty for us, and we'll work on it later. So pages is where we create our page objects later. The screenshots, it's just a you know optional place to save screenshots. It actually does it automatically when you hit. When you give a command for cucumber, built-in steps. When I save screenshot, blah, 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 it saves it in this folder. It's just hard-coded to that location. You cannot change it. All right? Now, and then we have support and we have step definitions. And obviously we have our feature. So you have predefined feature, right? That has like Google and we have done some extra stuff there. Now, let's, so I think predefined is pretty simple, so just our framework is going out there. But step definitions, I'll talk about later, so step definitions is a place where it actually creates steps for you when you define those in Ruby. So we'll look at it a little bit later. So let's just pay attention at hooks. So I'm not going to go into the code much. I don't expect you to understand this. Okay? Just really high level. So what this guy has is just actually hooks, lifecycle events. So the way it works is that when you just say run your project, it looks for after configuration hook. Just to like, here's the kind of block. After configuration means after initial configuration of project, which is like what? Configuration cucumber is reading cucumber YAML and understanding where the files are. That's what configuration is. Okay. So after configuration is basically first lifecycle event that you can catch. And what's normally happening here? So what do I have? I just start open the browser. So all this code for tweaking the browser so it works more stable. So you can see I define, okay, where is my Chrome driver path? It's relative to the project, so it's basically in drivers folder. That's why it says dot drivers Chrome driver. And I check if it's Windows, then it's .exe. That works in both systems. They have this different extension. Now, so this is the place I can say what's the path for my Chrome driver. So Chrome driver path, you don't necessarily need to define the code, but it's really recommended. If it's not finding it, if you don't define the code, then expect it somewhere in the path. It actually asks the system, hey, do you have the Chrome driver, you know, somewhere? And if you have it in the path, both Mac and Linux, then it will find it. Otherwise, it will fail. But as you know, okay, assuming I have somewhere my Chrome driver. I forgot tomorrow what this is, like another computer in one place, another place. And as you know, I have to upgrade it also, right? It's much better to source control it and have it with framework, because it might not work on different versions of Chrome driver or whatever. Make sense? So that's why it's better to define the path and keep it locally with the computer. So whoever takes this code will get the Chrome driver it works with, okay? What else? And this is just the options. Those are modules in Ruby. Like one of the kind of advantages, disadvantages of Ruby is modules. Pretty cool thing, but a little bit complicated syntax. Like, you know, it's like a double column, like, you know, predator, right? So, so it's like just to memorize it this way. But you rarely use it. So it's just configuration, so you don't expect it to write much of it, okay? Maybe a couple of functions like this. It's like same as XPath functions, like contains and what else, you know, text. That's two functions you should know. And here is all the Chrome-specific parameters. So we say, okay, start maximized, that's why it gets maximized. You don't want a cache, you don't care about certificate, you don't want the pop-ups, you cannot handle them. You don't want it to know it's a test version, otherwise it might block or think about like hack or something. I don't want a download notification, or, you know, I think I have twice saying. I don't want translation, and there's one I just recently added as prefetch, just a bit faster work. Okay? And the way it works is just like this, so that's what opens the browser. So I have those options, and I just pass it. I just say, driver equals Chrome. That's why when it opens. So from this line ever, this is my code instance for my physical browser. Like if you make a software browser in the computer, in a physical computer. Question?
Is the file generated by default?
No, I have written it. I have written it. So I'll show you. So all of this stuff, not necessary, to be honest with you. You can just have this line. You don't need options. It's just more like configuration, tweaking. So that's why I think you can go ahead and use this project like for whatever. I have license, it's MIT license. There's nothing like, I created this project from scratch, so there was no like any liability or whatever. It's MIT license on GitHub. So, but I'll show you how to create from scratch a complete kind of basic project. So it's really like maybe 1 hour thing together. Okay? So I'll show you, and it's not really necessarily needs all this stuff like this. It's just more like, it makes it more stable. And for if we have Firefox, all you have to do is you have Firefox driver, it's a Gecko driver, and you have to put other arguments for Firefox. It's specific. Like I have example, like on Windows, you have some, like really similar, way to like, see like same stuff. Is it same for Chrome? And for Firefox, it's just different. You know, just for IE, it's different, and whatever. So it's just specific, not to the code, it's specific to the browser you're going to work with. Okay? Okay, so that's it. And then what this is about, it's just kind of hacks. I have put, it's like, on the Mac, it doesn't make a model. Like it opens, it just still works in the background. You might want this, right? It's pretty nice. But for now, as educating everyone, is you see how it works, right? That's why what I do is actually some kind of hack we'll learn later. That's how I execute JavaScript on my browser. I just bring some alert, so alert always model kind of brings everything on the foreground, and then I accept it right away. So that's why like it's like maybe some blip. That's how it brings it to the foreground. It's not really necessary actually. That's the bottom line. So what's necessary here in after configuration step? Just one line, which is this guy. That opens the browser and connects this driver with actual physical instance. Okay? The rest of one hook, it's called hooks. So it's after configuration, it's the initial hook. Executed once at the very beginning, before everything else. And then, you know, so you look at Cucumber, right? Those are steps, those are scenarios. So those are hooks that, there's a hook that after everything else, what to do, it's called at exit. At the end, just close the browser. So some browsers close automatically, like Chrome. It's with specific parameters, so you don't need to close it. Like some browser, like Firefox, you want to close it. That's why I said, okay, if it's not like Chrome, then close it, quit. And but there are other lifecycle events, such as you can have before, same as after configuration, before each scenario. So before every single scenario, it will do something, always. So it'll execute scenario, get back here. Execute scenario, get back here. Execute scenario, get back here, okay? Before next scenario. And what it does, who can tell me what is it actually doing? It cleans cookies, right? You can, like, somebody that you might be logged in. So that's just example what you might want to do before each scenario. Unless you want to close the browser, open again. That will take some time. Otherwise, you just clean cookies and that's it. Okay, maybe clear cache also. But cookies pretty much is all it keeps. I don't have the cache through the param here. I don't want to cache ever on Chrome when it's automation. That's why I don't keep cache. Because sometimes if you know, like your QE guys, or you should have thought, sometimes as UI bug, somebody fixed the bug, but you still see it. You have to clear the cache, so it actually gets the latest files with the bug fixed. But in automation, you want always the latest, right? Imagine it's cached and it's no bug, but tomorrow it will be back. And if you don't use the cache on it, then you can see it. That's why you don't want a cache. And it never saves cache, but it does save cookies, which is like login session and stuff. That's why you want to delete cookies. You want to keep cookies through the scenario, but you want to delete before the next scenario. Make sense? And then you can also like tweak it, okay, before specific scenarios, you can say only do something. That's what you can do, like some data context setup or whatever. And also you can do after scenario, like before scenario, after scenario, pretty simple. And in this case, what do I do here? If it fails, save screenshot. That's what the code is about. Nothing else. Again, you don't need to know like this code, how this works. It's not with driver. It's also complicated in Java and Python. Just you probably use it. It's like something you just copy paste from somewhere. Okay. And it actually embeds. Not only does it save screenshot, but also it kind of embeds into report. Kind of makes it part of report. And also, you can do actually after each step, you can also do something. You want. So every single step it might do something extra. So that's what this is for. It's called hooks. Again, you can name it whatever you want. Normally it's called hooks. And this is just lifecycle events. The main ones are before all, after all, and also you can do before scenario and after scenario. Any questions? And that's written, of course, in Ruby. So again, it's more like it's something I don't expect you to understand right now. And maybe at the end of the class, you'll look at it and you'll see it's much clearer. But we are going to focus on WebDriver API. That's it. So that's our framework. So again, it contains of few folders. So when you create your own, you still create the same folder structure manually. Just manually create those folders yourself. There's no way around it. So you should have like base project name folder, which will contain gem file with all the libraries. And if it's cucumber, it will just have this line, cucumber. And then it will contain like output for your report, the drivers to keep your browser drivers, and features, which will have step definitions, sure, the features at the same level, and support for lifecycle events. And you normally don't go and update it, so it's just done and that's it, you never touch it. So if it's done in a good way, you never touch this again. Maybe with minor modifications. Yes?
What about the, if you go down there will be external libraries?
Yeah. So, okay, it's a good question. Okay, what's the like, external library stuff for, right? So that's what, when you actually install those libraries, it automatically, so you never touch it manually. It just automatically managed through by Wandler. So it looks at those libraries, looks at all dependencies, and puts all of them here. Okay? So if you look at this guy, you can open it. There's a bunch of stuff. You can see quite a few libraries. I think I have some board issue. So you basically have like all these libraries inside, okay? And just everything, all dependencies. So they actually also locked. So once you first time run install, it creates a gemfile.lock. So lock is basically gives framework to know, okay, it's already installed somewhere. So you can actually open it. It's automatically generated file, the lock, and it has all the dependencies. So if you look at this guy, and you just need five libraries. But in fact, for those five to function, it installed like 35. Make sense?
Yeah.
And it says at the bottom, like what's it? See, like those are main one, and those are all installed to support the libraries. Okay? All right. So that's pretty much the framework review. Any other questions? All right. So just all in all to say, so you, I think you have use specific versions that, so what, how do you create a framework? You try different versions, how they work together, how to work without each other, make sure they're effective with the project you want to solve, like you need to know like what the browser, normally it's a Chrome today, as the main browser on, you know, on the market. It's used a lot, it's one of the leaders. And that's why you want to use it in automation. Now, automation can support several browsers, but in reality, only one really supported. There's no like every single support, because you still need to also run it. Imagine you have 20 hours for regression to run. You have, okay, now you just have limited resources to run it on all the systems. Unfortunately, specific browsers require specific approaches. So you might try to run write cross browsers code, but most likely it'll be for specific like acceptance maybe, but not for every single regression scenario. So that's why you have specific versions, and then every company uses their own set, and it's updated quarterly, annually, whenever it stops working, because browser updates automatically, right? And also you want to run the latest browser because that's how users also get automatically. But important to use what's stable. Like we have. There is 2.5.2, I think, but we use 2.4.4 because it's more stable. At RubyMine, there is a 2018, we use 2017. That's always the rule, just use previous stable version. It's called, normally it's called LTS, long-term support versions. Great. Any other questions? So let's take a look at Cucumber a little bit. So behavior-driven development framework, right? And if you look at this definition, just a way to write automated test cases. So if somebody asks you at the interview, okay, what's Cucumber is, so make sure you memorize the definition. They say it's a behavior-driven development approach to write automated test cases. And then you can give your own explanation, like, okay, it's just English, like sentences in specific format that's easy to connect to the code. Okay? And I'll give you examples later, like why is it so much more simple. So the idea is that it's also good on the interview that you provide some story, like about your project. You can say, okay, we write, yeah, we have some project in Cucumber, so I use like some keywords, like giving one. So I always recommend at the interview to think about some quick response, like by heart, and also give some extra kind of examples. Ideally from practical examples. So that's a proof that you not only remember by heart, but also you have some real work you have done. So like, I for this course, I have talked with my colleagues that also interview a lot in Poland, India, and here. So that's what I'm gonna share with you. Again, maybe other companies do other way, but at least few companies and that my friends work with, that's the way that they do it. Because, like, how do you guys select people? That's just a recommendation to give some kind of extra examples from your perspective experience. And also, like, by the way, like I mentioned about it, some people who interview you, they might not want to interview you. Just do their own job, you know, the introverts. They just want to, don't be disturbed, you know. And they say, okay, tomorrow you interview this guy, you know. And he's okay, what they do? So they just look, interview questions for automation engineer and just go over with you. That's why you get this whole developer questions, because which you're not supposed to use. Because people who interview you may not know like what's position about, because they just like maybe developers or just QA who have no idea about the code. Okay, so that's why like I will go over a specific section. It's called interview questions, and I'll explain to you what specific code exercise you have to know during this interview process. Okay. But so why do we have why cucumber? First of all, so why do we talk about cucumber so much? So why cucumber? So essentially, when you talk about cucumber, it's a programming language, yeah. And if you think about programming language, like how it all started, like what computer actually understands and can read, what is it like zeros and ones, right? So like electricity, no electricity. I think today people work on like quantum computers, and like we just now understand like zero, one, and unknown state, you know, the quark state, but it's still in progress. So basically the basic state is zero and one. There's nothing else. So the way you write the program is like this, like when you want to talk computer language. By the way, who knows what this is? Huh? Yeah, binary, what that means? Just numbers, yeah? Like it's just numbers. From 0 to 16. But of course, it's not simple like this. It's something like this, and it's like megabytes and megabytes of text, of code like this. So the first step, like once, at some point in the 60s, like 100 years, like almost 100 years back, it was enough. But no, now it's not enough. So it's all became more and more complicated. So essentially, it was assembler language that basically behind each operation there is some specific processor instructions and zeros and ones, and you can just write it like this, you know, keep in memory, like move it in this registry, remove it, and so on. So I used to write something like this, but unfortunately if you write this and you look at it 1 month later, you have no idea what it means. So but what this means, I can tell you, it's a hello world program. So if you are going to be an assembler developer, you write something like this as the first day you exercise. By the way, those guys are still in need because it's a disassembly. Like normally hackers work with this kind of stuff. But now next revolution was a C language, which is not really similar in the syntax with Java, by the way. But the way you can write the same program is much more simple, but you just need to include the library, the CD input-output, standard input-output. You have some main function. It's still the same problem with Java. You have to have main function. And you just print from a line, right? Of course, you have to in Java provide all these parentheses, you know, semicolon, double quotes, and all this stuff. Otherwise, it will not work. So that's a C language. In Java, of course, it's a bit more easier way, actually, like this, just one line. In Java, everything is a class. So you have to say system class, static method out, print line, and you can provide it. Okay. In Ruby, by the way, and like Scala and other languages, the next level of simplification is like this. Like Ruby, you can do like this. It's a print hello world program. Just p print. Of course, you can say put string, put s, or print. But you can also do this. There's no like need for like semicolon or parentheses or whatever. But of course, even with this, like it's a simple program. It's hello world. So in reality, the program would look more complicated, like something like this. Even like in so that's by the way Ruby example. So you have some kind of Firefox browser, right? And you check environment if it's QA, login URL will be one. If it's pre-prod, maybe different URL. Yeah, and then it eventually opens it. So it's still kind of a bit more complicated. So if you write in GUnit, like in Java, or if you write in like RSpec. With the time, it's more complicated to understand your problem. When you look back, you have tons and tons of this kind of code. So to understand it, you have to provide in the function at the top some kind of, you know, comment. It's even like built in the function. It's called description. You put description. But the main problem with description is that you have description here. You have like 50 lines down, another step, 50 lines down, like 100. So you cannot look at it. Of course, you can run it. When you run it, it gives you kind of a summary. But when you look at the code and you want to change it, it's complicated to manage this. So, and everything else is kind of complicated. So in Cucumber, like what exactly here, How do you do it in Cucumber? Just one line. Just say, give me an ID to loading page. And it's just something that is human readable, and that's what always good for no matter your developer or whoever else. That's the ideal way to test, because for testing, you need to know scenario. And that's how you define scenario. It's self-driven by scenario. So in Cucumber, test driven by scenario, not by code, which you kind of, you know, attach some description what it actually does. So that's the main benefit of Cucumber. It's driven by scenario itself, as long as you follow the format that it represents. So pretty much that's the approach. That's a win-win situation when you get it. And we only look at this one. So essentially, it's just you have steps, which is your functions. And they combine the scenarios. And they have a file with features and stuff. So something like this, you have played at home with more complicated language, but you can write this pretty soon. It's just natural what you want to do, and it's data driven. You say, okay, it's 5 characters. You provide 3, obviously, you get an error. So that's an example of Cucumber. In the code, it will be like 6 times more, and you still have to put the same comments. In Cucumber, you just run from this level, which is separate. And it's also used to form a result, which is a report of your scenario. Make sense? So we'll look at it more when you actually do it, but essentially what happens behind those steps? But still there's some code, yeah? There's no way, today at least. And it's good that there's no way, because that's why you need us humans to write it. Robots start writing code and they'll be in trouble. So like when you look at this kind of steps, essentially it's called steps level, right? Or feature level. And let's take a look at one step. So like given a navigated query login page, same you looked before. So it, when you implement it, you'll write your own step definition. It's an actual snippet for this specific code. So you can think about this as like a function name to access result. And you can pass arguments here also, the same way. But essentially, when you implement this, it also forms a function which you can call through the code as well, inside the code, with no problem. Just normal function. Okay? And it has all this code that is associated. So, of course, when you move in the page object pattern, it'll look more complicated like this. Because there are all, normally it's always 3 layers. Even without Cucumber, so there's still 3 levels in everything. You know, some development background, like, you know, MVC, right? Model View Controller. So it's like a Trinity, everywhere it's the ideal kind of framework scenario. Okay. So in this level, what we have is we have step, we have our step definitions the same way, and we also have page object. Just a bunch of pages and driven by definitions, controlled by steps. So we'll look at it a bit later when we actually start working on page objects. Any questions? Are you good? All right. So basically we have started already looking at Cucumber steps, and we're going to play a little bit today with those steps. And what we're going to do is we already have a library which has predefined steps for us. We're just going to play with it a bit, make sure we know how to use XPath. We can pass XPath and it will be driving browser for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to use this library for today. Some of you have done some homework on it. And what it represents is just the predefined steps. So it's kind of built-in steps that you can use, and they are very generic. That's why they allow you to do whatever you like. And you can play with it a little bit before you move into our step definitions. Okay? So essentially what this does is, if you write your own step definition for every single step, you don't need to worry about it with this library. It's already has it implemented for you. The only negative side is that it's very generic. You cannot build a nice generic library, no matter how you want. You don't know like what's project for, right? It's just a generic. So that's why you just can say, okay, you can say ID or name or XPath, and it'll click on it, or it will, you know, fill with information or whatever. Of course, like when you start keep writing, it will be like this. So it's something that really generic out there. But it's ideal for learning perspective. Okay? So as long as we have a couple of exercises done, a few actually of today, If you're all comfortable, we're going to move on to Ruby itself. Are you good? So guys, let's have a break for about 15 minutes. So I get back 8:25 and we'll have a lab. Okay guys, so as I said before, we're going to work with Cucumber predefined libraries. And that will make our life easier in terms of handling the code. Okay, so we don't need to worry about like this code, syntax errors in there, and so forth. So you only can have syntax error in here, right? Like here. That's what you should worry about. But I just want to, even the theory is like, it's really simple. Just do it today, okay? Because that's really valuable in terms of your skill as expat. Yeah. Because when you start working with Ruby, then you need to think about all these libraries and functions and blah, blah, blah. For now, you only focus on XPath. And it'll look like terrible, those scenarios. But at least if you finish those tasks, that would give you a good head start. And of course, like there's a bunch of like pre-built steps. So I have created for you, it's called predefined.feature. Just so when you type it, it kind of finds it. It's not really part of library, but because library assumes you know by heart something. But when you start typing, it kind of helps you, right? At least it helps you when you start typing. As long as you know what you do, click whatever, it'll help you. So, like, there's a bunch of different steps. Navigation, right? So navigation just mainly use number one. There is also click. From here, you only use the first one. You don't need to do all the fancy stuff, except maybe the forcefully click, which is JavaScript alternative. If you have small resolution, you'll need it. Because if it's not visible, I'll talk about this issue later. It's also like something that only a person who knows WebDriver would know how to react to it. It's sometimes an interview question, just to check quickly, like, do you know something or you have no idea? Like source control. And it's accept alert, dismiss, very simple. Input, just use this guy, number one. Maybe clearing also would be good. And of course, assertion, that's you'd use the full spectrum. Because the main focus of WebDriver, what? Assertion. Okay, so of course, like you can also wait for something or wait for specific XPath. Like explicit wait for something. Explicit wait that's something you need to know you're going to use in WebDriver later on. All right, so okay, let's go. Yeah. So what I want you to do is to get to this URL. WebDriver Ruby, and you'll find Cucumber Lab. I have sent some of you who has done homework. I've sent you like so you can practice a little more. I updated it more exercises, so you can still get it. Okay, it's scriven.com/webdriver/ruby. It's Cucumber Lab. It's PDF. I would like you to open and you would like to work with it for the next at least one hour. So this is the page you're going to work with, the sample page. So there's kind of categories of tasks that is there. So there's some basic tasks that I'd like you to focus on. If you feel comfortable with basic tasks, then take optional. There's optional in between. Some of you have done at home maybe, and there's optional at the end with different site. It's a little more tricky, that requires some expat knowledge. So it looks like your kind of development looks like this. Like if you just do some basic tasks, all basic tasks, and just more advanced you become. So for now, you just focus on given when, then, and but predefined steps, okay? And if you open PDF, you'll see something like this, right? You have it? So this is just simple. What this is about, you have a sample page, and it's a responsive page. What you would like to do is just to change resolution. And then you can see that some of the stuff disappears. Yeah? You don't need to verify all three items, just one good enough. you normally go for boundary conditions that you understand with experience. Like, you don't need to verify every single thing, but at least one is good enough. You can do all three, of course, if you like. Just make sure that you change resolution, not display. Change it back, it's displayed. Make sense? So that's task number one. Number two is, it's about username field. So what is it about? You fill some data, bless you, and you try to submit the page, and it doesn't allow you because it's at least two characters needed. So you need to verify that error message. Okay? Sometimes you have to see this dynamic. It doesn't update the page. It's called jQuery validation. Now it's one of the standards of UI development. As long as you have two characters, it's good. Okay? Now, next one is about email. Again, similar one, but it requires some kind of valid email address. And then it's happy. Again, the definition can vary, but now they allow, by the way, a domain of first level. So you can even have email like this. Technically, it's allowed. There's only like .com or something. But it's only for chosen ones. Still, it's valid enough. The next one is about password, right? So what is it about? So this guy is disabled. You have some password here, now it's enabled. That's what you want to verify. The next one is about name. So for name, I would like you to make sure you click on it, because that's the way to fill it out. That's what probably user would do. Sometimes the input may be even disabled or whatever. It's a dialog open, so it provides some data. You provide, you know, save, and then fills out the result. So you want to verify that actually happens like this. Okay? And that's pretty much our basic stuff, I think. Except privacy policy, obviously, just click on the button here. That's it. So that's, I think some of you have done homework with required fields, pretty much you've done already. Just a bit variations, just play with those variations, okay? But if you feel like bored with those, then I'll give you the next exercise. So you can play with more like this, like third-party agreement, you know, karmic, date of birth. It's a bit tricky one. It's up to you, like how far you want to go. And then finally, you want to submit and verify the data. Okay? That's the final step. Now, for those of you who played already, I would like you to take some other stuff. Yeah, go ahead. Question?
What about the uploading element? There is a
upload file?
Yeah.
I'll show it in when we look into Ruby. Actually, it's possible from this as well. I'll show how to deal with upload file. It's really easy. You just send keys to it. Yeah, you just send keys to it. I think it's not part of those steps. In fact, actually, if you update GitHub.
No, there is a button on your page, like upload.
I know, but predefined steps, I think you don't have like upload the file or something.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah? So let's do it in Ruby itself. Let's, for now, don't worry about it. But just a hint for you, if you want to play, that's everything else that you've done. Upload the file by sending text. It's basically, you send keys. Basically, you type into it the location of the file on your computer. That's the way it works.
Wait.
It's a path to file on your computer. That's how you put the data in it. Okay? If you find out this button XPath, it's an input with the type file. You just type into it the location of the file on your computer. Try it. If you want to play, again, it's not making much sense to do it through this. I just saw you play with XPath, to be honest with you. So for those of you who played at home with this all stuff, there's three more test cases. You can go ahead with those. So again, for advanced guys, you go here. If you like already feel you have enough for previous case, you know everything, you move directly to 9, 10, 11. It's a different site, calculator.com. So what is it about? Just a site that you can play with spots. This is just calculators. Okay. So first scenario is just standard calculator. You open it, it's new window, by the way. And you do some calculations, verify them. It's a little bit tricky. For this one, I would like you to update GitHub. So what you want to do is you say VCS update project, only for optional. because I have done one step for you that will help you to make it properly. Okay. GCS update project, only for optional tasks. Huh? What's up?
Should we say merge?
If you have merge, yeah, I'll take a look. Don't touch this yet. If something merge requested, just leave it. I'll help you. Okay. So that's standard calculator. The next one is area. Area calculator. It's another one. It's like this one. So you just provide some data and you calculate and it gives you a result. It's a bit different. And the final one, it would be temperature. So it's just another option out here. You provide some data and you calculate. Okay. Just play with it. It's just a different spot. It's tricky. So this task is clear. Just work from first, second, third, whatever. If you've done it basic, go to optional. Optional first, if you haven't done it, try it on the page, sample page. Only if you feel like you know everything there, move to calculator. So it's pretty much enough for everyone, I think, for now. Are you guys good? Right. So for those of you who are doing merge, I'll stop by if you have like merge conflicts or whatever. Okay. I just want to show you guys, like some of you like complete beginners, some of you a bit more advanced. I just want to, like, the questions on and off. For those of you working on optional, you can keep working. But for those of you who want just initial advice, I just want to show you here, okay? Just going to go together. So we already have predefined.feature. That's our base file. You might have added, like, Google, Bing, right? Yandex, have Yahoo. So we don't need to create a new feature for this. Not necessarily. Let's just keep going. So I say predefined 5, okay? In my case, but you might have like 3, 4, whatever. So what I should do is write scenario, right? So like you just need to say, first of all, tag, add tag name. That's the first step. The second is you would put scenario name. So just put capital S scenario. Use tab, it will finish for you. And you put like what's the name for it, right? So let's say like responsive UI. Doesn't matter. Like it's just a name that identifies this scenario. And then you just go with like given I navigate. And this URL you would copy from the sample page. So what to open? The sample page URL. Like this. And then you keep going. So for our scenario, what we should check? It checks that it's visible in desktop. I don't care about tablet, for example. But it's not visible in phone, right? So, like, what? So that, there's one tricky thing. When I open the page, do I guarantee it's desktop? Or yes or no?
Yes.
Not necessarily. Not always. You should not. Yeah, because, well, if you have general test case, right? General use case, probably it's always desktop. But for this specific case, it's about resolution. So you should, before doing any verification, you should make sure you're in the right resolution.
Maximize.
Yeah, you can of course maximize, yeah. But maximize is actually built in, by the way. It's a start maximize in the Chrome. But I think there's some bug actually, there's some bug that when you close Chrome and some resolution, open it, it opens in the same resolution. If you close Chrome and like phone layout, it'll open in phone layout. So I mean, you can assume that, but never assume any precondition. There has been some kind of questions like, okay, like I have some data, how do I predefine the data for my project, right? I think it's a really basic, necessary thing. And there's two ways to approach it. One is you have some data pre-configured for automation and you use it. The second approach is that you create data for automation and then you delete after you complete. The second approach is much more feasible, but it takes a bit more time because every time you run it, you might create data. Then you run test, then you delete the data. Of course, it's really necessary that a project has API. Then you can create all the data through API, like REST API, that's now standard. I hope your project have it. If not, then you use the UI, that's okay. But ideally, you use REST API to create it, which takes 3 seconds for like hundreds of data created. Then you work with that data, and then you delete it through the API as well. That's the ideal approach, okay? So, great. But now, In our case, we have resolution verification, so you want to set resolution before you do verification. Okay. Of course, like, how do you check what's the desktop? Well, there's actually some of you found that there's a bug. Actually, viewport is not supported. So if you like use Chrome, like mobile view, it doesn't work. Okay. But it's, you cannot use this mobile view in automation either. So it's a bug really, but it's not doesn't make sense for automation. So how do you check mobile view? Just use resolution, resize. That's it. So how do you resize? How do you know like what's the desktop, what's the phone? How do you find it?
Google.
Not, yeah, Google it. Stack Overflow, right? All right. Yeah, that's a good answer. A good answer, really. Yeah, Google everything. You find everything on Google. You ask developer, or probably not developer, product manager, because developer might not agree with product manager. So let them decide. But product manager is the guy who calls the shots. So you should ask like, okay, what's the requirement from product manager, right? Or look in the story, like if it's agile, or specifications if it's not agile. So, but you can also look up in the code. So to be honest, I forgot. Like normally you go for boundary condition, right? So I, to be honest, forgot. What's the resolution already? Whatever it was done. So I can actually just try to look it up. So let's see. So it's based on Bootstrap responsive UI. And there's a specific case. So you can just basically open CSS file, beautify it, and look up like what's the resolution definition for it. Okay, so yeah, I have some data. It's okay. 992. So again, just look up like it's a specific behavior based on the pixels.
Huh?
Yeah. 768. Yeah. When you resize
the browser, that shows the pixel.
Yeah, of course. You can. Yeah. So that's good. Good point. Yeah. Basically, you would go for always boundary condition. So you would like to have like something plus 1 pixel, right? So like this is phone, this is tablet. So you just want to go with this minus 1 pixel. That's the recommendation. Just like always for automation, you choose boundary condition. Okay? So what's the bit for it? 768. Okay, good. Okay, so 768. Okay, good. Okay, so that's my data, right? And what I want to do is I use step that does it. So I say when resize, right? Yeah. See, like there's some resize step. So how do I find it? I say when is it's an action. Okay, and then I put
resize.
I just from okay. I don't know what is it, but I just guessed. And if I couldn't find resize, I would put size. So I couldn't find size, I would put width or something. So I can just put width. It also finds it. So once it finds it, you don't need to type the whole thing. Just say tab, and it gives you the data. So all you have to do is to say 765. That's 767. The height doesn't matter. The height really doesn't matter. So, yeah, so. I mean, but you should have something like this. But of course, this is mobile view, right? It's okay. So let's start with mobile. So, and then I need to verify that something not visible. So I can do a then sleep or wait. Put 5 seconds for wait. See, like I open it, resize it, wait. It's So I want to see my own eyes if it's up correct or not. So maybe I'm mistaken. But I click on run it. Yes, you know, looks good. It's not visible. I just now want to automation verify it's not visible. Make sense? So how do I verify through automation?
Sure.
Yeah, so first of all, what's my step start? What's going to be the start, my step? How should I start? It's a verification step, so what's the keyword? Keyword is then.
Yeah.
So like given it's a precondition, so I'll initially open it. When is an action? Yeah? And then it's verification. First, it should not be when, actually, I should put end or something. So before it, I should put then. Yep. And I will put. So now I need to see, okay. See, like when you join a team and they have cucumber steps, you should figure out what they already have. Like our QE, for example, they write like test case and feature. They write like no automation, they just write it. Once they're typing, it shows up what's already there. So if it's already coded by someone, they just put it this way. Just put parameters in. Like when I log in as administrator, it's a really basic step. It's really reusable. A lot of actions, when I go to blah, 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 like drop down, it's reusable. So the more steps automated have code, the less code you need to write going forward. So that's the benefit of this framework. And the test cases can be written for you by functional QE. Nobody, like, non-technical people should be able to do this, as long as they follow the format. Okay. Of course, sometimes automation do it from scratch also. So you just reuse whatever you have. So, I think it's something like present. Say present. So just say present, and there's three options: link, and element. You need element. So see, like element having, so you'll have expat value, should or should not. So this means it's a regular expressions. You don't need to use regular expressions in Cucumber. It's just we're not going to use them. It's really makes it a bit more technical than it should. It really doesn't need to be like this, to be honest. It's a not good design, I would say. We use this library, but not necessarily always ideal. So it may basically means that it should be present, should not be present, both support. Bless you. So you have, you just select this, you just say, how do you select it? Which button?
Click.
Enter or tab. Say tab. Okay, so when I have tab, I put here what?
Expat.
And the next will be, that's expat value, right? Something I expect. And this I just need to clean. I expect should not be present. Okay. Just clean it like there's no like parentheses and stuff. Looks like this. It doesn't have orange background anymore, so it's good to go.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What difference between display and present?
So what's the display?
You have on the top I wait 5 seconds for element.
Ah, okay.
Display.
Yeah, this is wait for something. It's essentially the same, but. I'm not going to focus on the steps. Those steps are not ideally done, so I will not refer to, oh, you should do this way, okay? But it's, in this case, it's just to use different words for same. Present, display, same here. I think maybe so. Yeah, I think it's not a good choice of word, I will say. Well, it's good for indication, so. So let's move on here. It would be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. So I verify it's not present. So what should I verify not present is one of those guys. Yeah?
Location.
Okay, let's try location. So how do I check location? I need to expat for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right click on location, inspect, and open the crop path. And choose relative. Or I can go with location value, which is better. It has ID. Okay? So this is my XPath that should not be present after resolution changes. Make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the first step. So what is left here? Now I just need to resize it. So I say when resize. Now I just need to resize. Let's say, for example, it doesn't matter. It's up to your browser. With only changes is with, and this step is going to be exactly the same, but I delete not. So really, my scenario looks like this. I can run it. I have wait at the end, so it's a bit visible. It will stop at the end. I feel like it opens up. Sometimes there's some issue with the connection, but yeah, good. See, it resized it, waits 5 seconds, and it should close it. It's passed. Make sense? So that's your example scenario.
Let's say another tip for resizing. For Mac machines, whenever we take a screenshot and command shift and 4, you can see the number of pixels.
Yeah. So there is some keyboard. So shift to what?
Command shift 4.
Command shift 4, yeah. So that would help you to figure out, right? This is actually taking a screenshot. Yeah, you can actually see like what. What is it about?
Yeah.
But it's only Mac.
Yeah.
But to be honest, all the size thing, it's not really common case for automation.
But
just want to show you.
Idea of what size you're talking about, right?
You normally like. To be honest with you, this normally don't have scenario like this. It's just train scenario.
Okay.
But normally, what you do is you just run everything for phone. Then you run everything, so you only decide at the beginning and set the resolution you want at the beginning. You don't touch it ever. Okay, I'm going to show you just one example. I think it's a classic example. Just let's do it. I just want to show you, don't need to repeat after me, so I'll give you a solution. Just one example real quick, so you continue, you can learn, okay? So let's see. One sec. Okay, so let's say you have sample page and you just want to fill out the name, okay? That's my sample page, I just want to fill out the name, because it has a little bit of trick. So how do you fill out name? I click on it, fill out both, and save it, right? So how do I do it? I do it predefined. 6, they have scenario. Name validation. So the given is same. I open URL. Yeah. So then I go and click. So how do I do like when click? There is put XPath, and all I have to do is extract it from here, right? What do I click on? So I think it's all XPath on this page is pretty nice. So you can just copy whatever is in there. Okay. Now, so you click on it, okay, that's what the state is. You just reproduce it here. And now you fill out first name and that's middle name, whatever. So you just put the next is would be entering. And you do and enter. Again, XPath. Sorry, what you enter is your name in this case. And this is XPath, what you put it into. And similar would be last. As well, let's say I want to put also middle, just middle. So all changes is just spot. Okay. Now, so I just put the same whatever. By the way, one thing I think it is also verify it's visible, right? So how do we verify visible? I can verify one of the elements on it visible. The one I want to enter into, it's also good. Or I can check the whole dialogue. So I can right click inspect, and I can go all the way up until the full dialog highlighted. And as you can see, pretty nice, has expat class UI dialog. Actually, not really nice, but I can figure something out.
But now what?
Huh? What's that?
Can you pick up some specific symbol?
Sure, yeah. If you like, it's your call. How do you check it? But let me just show you something. So I say, once I click on it, right, I want to check it's visible. So how do I check visible? I say present. So I said then present. Element have an expat. And I just copied for now this guy, which is not nice. So actually, let's not do this. I need to simplify it, and let's see how can I do it. I just say contains class UI dialog. Might be looking good enough. And the rest of it, I just clean. And that's not the ideal case, so let's see. Well, it's actually role dialog, maybe better. Role dialog. Yeah, now it's good. So I just figured out, okay, here's a role, it's a custom attribute. I actually can do exact match also, not necessarily contains. I can just remove contains now. Role equals dialog. Yeah, still good. So that's the guy, and it should be present. So that's dialog just opened. I check if it's present. Make sense? And then I fill out all the data, and then I save. So save is one of the advantages of expats. I think it doesn't have much better. So just say then, actually when, pick, and I have. So the last step is, okay, I put everything saved. Now we need to verify this contains the data. So that's just one trick you need to know. It's not going to work if you just extract text. You never extract text from any input field. So you always get the attribute value from any input field. So if you inspect it, by the way, you'll see that as a value, now you have this data you have put. In fact, actually, I just did it for you. Like, as a developer, I put this like this. But in fact, you wouldn't see this on real input anywhere in production. But it's still going to save us value, just so you know. Okay, so it's not really visible, but it's there. Because when you submit the form, that's what value is sent to the backend. That's like standard behavior. So that's why, how do you validate it? You just check attribute. Then attribute, and you just check. So that element having expat, and you check this expat. Now it should have attribute. Attribute name what?
Value.
And basically it's your name. So that's what scenario should be in this case. So let's see. Yeah, see, that works. So that's just example out here. Another example, just to see, like, just one more. Predefined 7, like scenario, the date. It's a bit more tricky. Just want to show you that some examples. So again, you open the same way, right? You open it now. So I'll show you later, like I just want to give you a comparison, like how simpler would it look. For now, it will be looking like not ideal, but let's say date of birth. You click on it, you go with crop pad, yeah. So you again when click. So that's what first click going to be. Again, I would remove input with star. That would be optimization, because if you have ID, ID is supposed to be unique on the page. There are some bugs that ID is not unique. But it's a bug, so it's not really rarely, often happens. So now the next step would be, okay, I click on it, I fill out some date, right? So click on it, but there's some bugs. Actually, it's just not using. Yeah, so that's date picker, that's pretty standard date picker. So let's say I want to choose something. So I click on this guy and select something. That's month. Then I click something, let's say here, and let's say I put some year, and I put the date, right? So that's that's kind of example. I would select, so then validate the value here, right? So let's say, so how do I go for this guy? So I just look inspect, and it's a bit more complicated because it's really generated, auto-generated keys. But it has pretty nice option here. So again, I would not go with the class if possible. So what would you guys select here? The data handler. Yeah, so you just do data handler, and you put select mount in here. So it works pretty nice. So then I say and click. So there's a trick in view when you select an option, you can click directly on that option with WebDriver. Just some trick. You can click on select first, because as a user, how do you do? You open it, then you click here, right? Then you click on option. In WebDriver, you can directly click into option. That's just nice it is. But when you select an option, you should still put the parent, because it's option is part of select, child of select, right? That's why I say option. And here I can put, let's say, slash option. I can put index, actually, okay, it's diff. Okay, it's wrong. Okay, see now I have option. It gives me all 12 options. So I actually can go and select value 0, right? But value 0 is kind of like January 0, which is true. And 11 is December. But more logical if I just put option with index 1, that's January. The second is like, and so on. So let's say if I want November, I just say 11. So like for example, for me, it would be option 11. That will be November. Otherwise, I would say value equals 10, which is also November, but it's not really human. Okay. Because later you'll pass some values, and it, like you need to remember, okay, 10 is actually November. So the second option would be really similar. So let's say a year, right? When you pick a year, it's really simpler. It's similar. So also data handler. By the way, you can click, double click here. You can copy this attribute value, paste it. Again, you click here, double click on this guy, and then you paste it. That's your year, right? So it's exactly the same. And then obviously an option here, just a year. So in this case, I would go with option, but you go always for value. You can go with text here. It's just the numbers. But if there is a value, you always go with the value. So I just want to go with this. So that would be my second case. Yep. And the final, I need to select a date. So what's my date? So I just click on the date, right? So yeah, I need to figure out, like, how do I do it? Let's inspect like one day. So I have 17. And so what do I do here? I just go with A, right? So okay, it's an A. And I compare it. So see, it has 17 as a text. There is no other option. Let's say I try 6th. It's also text 6, right? It's good. And you can see it's really similar. Like select date, TD. Table data is select day. So I can follow the same pattern. Say TD at data handler. Equals select data, right? Now I have the full 30 days available. And all I have to do is now slash A and just put text and whatever my day, my days, my seven, so. And I just go with clicking on it, so. And that should close the day picker, right? That should close the date picker. All I have to do is verify with this guy, right? So it's also same. So I did then element. So I just put, what do you do? I do attribute. All I have to do is just now, I know the field actually, right? So this is my expat, and it should have, what attribute should it have? Value. and whatever is spec generated. Yeah, I think it's a mistake. What is it? Okay. Yeah, good eye. So yeah, so here. So that's my date picker. That's the most complicated out here, by the way. So let's see if it works. Yeah. So that's the way, so, and you can see like they all like select month, select year, select date structure. And let's say if you need anything else, you just select different month, your year, and your day. So that just, I mean, it comes with experience, you just need to do more of it. Right? It's a language, the more you practice, the more better you speak. Any questions? All right, so let's take a look at just I want to give you some tasks because I don't want to practice at home with this more. I think it's good enough. I'm going to give you a bit more tasks, okay? And you just want to really quickly look at the Ruby, and then there's some fancy things you can play at home with. Because you want to play with Ruby a little bit before next class. Remember, we need to do more homework and be more successful at the class. And I can help you and we can review it. So essentially, we use Ruby, right? It's a language set of code. It can be used in application, and you use gems. Rails is not used in our case. Ruby on Rails is a development framework. There are some courses, by the way, in Ruby today in San Francisco. I think it's like 15K paid, and they train you as a developer in Ruby. And then they give you like some internship or something. So you can do same money, more money actually, as an automation engineer for less money. So essentially, in Ruby, I recommend automation as a focus, not development. So it's really now, it's like home language, and it's used for automation a lot. So why Ruby? So it's pretty much, I like that it's really object-oriented language, and it's much simpler than any other one. So it's a great option to learn from scratch. On Ruby, once you know WebDriver, you don't need to relearn it's Java. If you switch to Java, you don't need to learn it again. It's same functions, same structure, same page objects, everything is same. As a developer, you have to learn again. Let's say if you're a really good Python developer, you need to start from scratch in Java, because Java you need to know like string, whatever. Like if you move to JavaScript, you need to know like Node.js, NPM, whatever libraries. It's just different technologies. For automation, one technology, different languages. So much easier. So it's I just want to emphasize it because I've seen some of you folks kind of learn Java. We have a person working only in Ruby 2 years. She had no technical experience. She moved out already. So she found a job in Java, having no idea about Java. She passed the interview. In 2 weeks, she started to type in Java very nicely by herself. So it's really like you don't need to focus on like, oh, yeah, I need to learn Java. In Java, you have much higher competition at the interview. In Ruby, you just have less competition. Again, if you know really well Ruby, you got some experience, you can easily find a job in any language. Python, Java, whatever. Python is closer to Ruby. Java a bit more strict, but still, rules are the same. So just, I mean, if you're beginners, I recommend to focus and learn something at a good level with language you have. Of course, ideally, if you have can do it at work, that's ideal case. You can find some job with this, and then you can switch later, okay? If you like. Again, I had a person like three years, she's working, she's also our intern. She switched like 2 jobs and still working in Ruby. So you can go later in Java, whatever language you like. And you know, every day there's new languages. Java now is being simplified. Now, you know, Java 12 now comes out. Eventually, I like to joke like Java will become Ruby because being simplified. Yeah, so yeah, this is, I think, this is less philosophy. Ikehira Matsumoto created Ruby, and he put some philosophy behind that you don't need to fight the language. Express what you like, natural, and you know, he wants people to enjoy the language. And I think it's built in Mac. I think he achieved his goal at least. Not every system has something built in. So it's really scripting language. It's you know, Java is pre-compiled language. Ruby is not. Ruby is an interpreted language. So Java is compiled into bytecode, and then it's a dot class, then executed. Ruby is interpreted right away. Okay, it's just a really good deep way to run it. So, and what else? Like, you know, when you learn programming, there's so many things. Like, like weakly types, strongly typed, that's object type, built-in types, you know, declaration, assignment, you know, so like the symbol type, there's different outputs, encapsulation, probably a few. I think I would not recommend starting this. The problem is that once you learn all of this and you don't use it, you just forget it.
Yeah,
it's like you never knew about it. But really, like that's the case. So all you have to do is just, you know, just to take it and just use it. And let's just start a little bit of coding. I think we have a few minutes, and that will be enough for you to continue at home. Yeah, sometimes you might see this. So don't touch it if it works.
Yes,
sometimes really good. So, but he should be happy, this kid, right? So let's do this, the following exercise real quick. So we have all Ruby built in our machines. You remember we installed Ruby? So we have all Ruby built in on our machines. It's called Interactive Ruby. So I would like to play a little bit. All you have to do is open your terminal or command prompt. Okay, this Windows is CFD. It's terminal on Mac. Sometimes it's called console, shell, or bash. It depends on implementation. You just open it and type IRB. So just make sure you open terminal. And you put IRB. So, like, are you good? Just do it and then enter, so it opens up the console. So now you can type in Ruby, and you can get result right away. So that's the difference is that when you have it in the code, you have to run the code. In here, you just enter, and it will be executed. Okay? So, and the way it works is, so you just have a, let's just try Hello World program. So, like, how do you print it? So, just, as you remember, print is like P or put S, or just let's do P. And in double quotes, you put Hello World. In Ruby, for strings, it allows you to have a single quotes also. But you want to get used to it, because in remember, we had a rule for expat to use single quotes always, so we can actually put inside of the code. Otherwise, you have to escape all these different quotes, double, single, and so on. Make sense? That's why you have to look this way. So once you enter, it basically, first step, it gives you the result, and then it's internal memory. That's just basically prints it. Okay. So you can actually use it for calculation if you like. So it's like 3 plus 5, you get some result. It's like 9 divided by 3, like 3. So how about like if you have 10 divided by 3, what's going to be the result? What's that?
3.
What's 3? Why is it not 3.3? Yeah, because it's integer. Yeah, because it's integer. So like, but there's a different types of, you know, in Ruby there's always a, everything is an object. So in there's, you know, there's definition in Java, like simple types or like primitives, and it's like object types. It's all object in Ruby, just to be consistent and simple. But every single item that you put, it still has a data type, right? And if you want to see the fraction decimal point, you have to say one of the two operands must have also decimal point, like 10.0. It will give you, don't ask me why it's 5 at the end, but at least it gives you good precision. It depends on your machine, by the way. It's like, it uses CPU to calculate. But now it gives you decimal because at least one of two operands is decimal. The same will happen if you say 10 divided by 3.0. the same kind of signal that it's like that. So, because normally in development and pre automation, you want to deal with integers without decimals. So decimals are used mostly in math. So like you just keep in mind, like if you have just 10 divided by 3, you don't have remainder. Although there's an operand in here that we'll use, like, okay, 10, 3, 3, right? But how about this? What is it? Yeah, so you know that. So what is it? It's a modulus. And it may be used in interview, by the way. I'll give you later the task to be used. So it gives you a reminder. So it's like, how does it work? It's basically you have, right? So 3, it's like 9, right? And what's left is 1. Right? So that's what it gives you. So it's really like it's 3, 1 third, right? But the percent sign gives you this guy, this result. What remains after operation complete? So this can be used if you have a lot of numbers. You can select every third one, every fourth one, or every even. So if the number is even, if what? It's divisible by 2 without remainder, right? If division by 2, any number will be 0, it's divisible by 2. So that's some cases that may be used, but you need to use it if else expression. Okay. So what else? I don't need to memorize it. It's just object structure, you know, for numbers in Ruby. So everything is like, if you talk about numbers, there's integer and float. So in Java, there's also float, but it's also got double, right, for bigger numbers. But here is just two separations. But in Ruby, there is also separation of this guy. Big nums are really huge numbers, and fixed num. So when you say, like, how do you check the class? You can call the function. You can actually go ahead and do it. Like, for example, 10 dot class. That's how you call the function. Say, okay, what class are you? It gives you integer. Or if you say 10.0, what class are you? It's going to be float. Make sense? So that's kind of the way you might ask anything, if you like. So yeah, that's just an example of this. And you can call the class. So one thing to play with is variables, because you would save into variable whatever you can save. There you like. You save into variable something that's like you keep in memory under some name. If you want to reuse it more than once. Just to use once, you can donate variable. But if you want to reuse more than once, you might save anything into variable. Like, let me give you an example. Like, for example, I want to reuse 10 several times. So I say, var 1 equals 10. So in Ruby, you need to declare a type. You don't need to say, like, var. So this is just a name right away. You don't need to say, like, is it integer or something, like in Java. Just give it a name, it'll initialize it. Okay? It's called initialization. So now, if I say variable 1, it's 10. Okay? So if I say variable 1 plus 3, what's going to be?
13.
Yeah? So okay, so how about if I say variable 1, now it's 3. So how about now?
6.
Yeah, 6. So it changes, it just deletes whatever it used to be. Can you say variable 1 now equals hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, in Ruby you can do it. In Java you cannot. In Ruby it doesn't care. So can you do like variable 1 plus 3 now?
Yeah.
No, you cannot. So it's, because it's string and it's integer. So that's what you cannot do in Ruby. But you can do it like this.
Okay.
Yeah, concatenation.
It'll be just concatenation. Right? So let's say, for example, if you have variable 2 now. So variable 3, I had some issues with this button. So let's say I have world. So what now if I say variable 1 plus variable 3, so what will happen?
Variable
1. Like without space. So if you want to do space, then you just do like this. That's called concatenation in any language. You just combine together. Like this. Okay? So another way to say it's called injection. So that's one way to do it. But another way to do it is like this. So I can just think I can use several approaches here. Like example is I use it like this. Variable 1, variable 2, 3. So what will be the result? The same. So I can use concatenation like this, or I can just have one string, everything within double quotes. But for this guy, it will not just be printed as string, but because it actually you know, get into variable, I just use hash and put in curly brackets. So I'll publish for you guys. I think there's some exercises just to play. I don't think it makes sense for you to play here. It's pretty simple enough. Just go with this and just play at home, okay? That will be your homework. There's also some of variables to use as conversion. Let's say it's a variable 4, let me number it. But if you remember, I cannot combine like that. Yeah, by the way, that's a variable 4, 3, right? Variable 5 will be, let's say, 5. So what will happen if I do like this? This will be error, right? Okay, so what if I say 2i? This is a method, see, you remember class, dot class. This is conversion method. It'll convert it to integer. So in the conversion method is 2i. Remember, in Java, like, you have to put like crazy stuff, so just 2i. So what's going to be resolved? Now it's 8. But if you do variable 4, 2s, now it will be 3 plus 5 concatenation. So that's the difference from that side, I think. Now the final thing is Boolean. So we have looked into integers and looked into strings. We play at home with those through IRB. There's also a Booleans. So what Boolean is about is just say true or false, right? But the main problem is Booleans are more complicated than integers or strings because Boolean is used in expressions. So then you have to know expressions because you validate, is it right or wrong? You can just do assertions. And the simplest thing you need to know, and actually it's maybe even enough for a beginner automation person, is if-else expression. So there's also like for loops and stuff, but if-else is good enough for beginners. I wouldn't give a sort array for beginner, to be honest here. I would give expand, I would give if-else conditions. So let me do examples. So mainly is you can do comparison operators like this. See, like double quotes means equals. So what it means, that I don't put like true false, but I put, okay, again, I don't know what it is, right? But I can say, so let's say variable 3 is, okay, there's 1, right? Variable 4, it's a number, right? Let's say variable 5 would be actual also number, right? And then let's say somewhere, I don't have no idea, like variable 5 less than variable 4. So both of the numbers,
yeah.
And result will be false or true. So obviously opposite is this, or like this, but more equals, exactly equals is double equals. So that's kind of the way this works. And normally this is used in if-else operators. So like it's, since it's one-liner, you have to use then, but in actual code you need to do it. So we'll practice next lesson in actual code, in actual Ruby mine, but at home you can play with this, okay? Like for example, like you have if, like variable 5, you can put in parentheses if you like, but you don't need to in Ruby. Let's say variable 4 more than variable 5. Again, you don't know at this point, what is it, right? It can be anything. You say then, and you can pretty much like do something, like print some value, you know, result 1. But you have to put end at that. So there's no need for curly brackets in Ruby, but you have to put end at the end, basically. And it gives you, see, like, nothing. But if I change this to less, it gives you result 1. See, condition false, then it would skip this guy, it would not print. nil means nothing. But in this case, it will print result 1. Okay. So how do you check if it's now if say else? And else I say else print result 3, for example. So I have now different result based on this. Okay, let me just do proper. Okay, so it makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So like you, let's say put 2, yeah, that's okay. So you have result 2 if it's more than, and you have result 1 if it's opposite. So basically, the execution fails, like the way it works, it will depend on this guy. Right. So if this is true or false, if this is true, then this guy gets executed. If this is false, it skips this guy gets executed. Okay? If there's no else, it just skips everything, it just goes out. So we'll play more with this if else stuff, it's less than it's just first thing to try, and actually it's pretty valuable when you go to URL in WebDriver. But that's pretty much the case. So what's your homework? So I'll publish those slides. It's going to be slides 3. At the end, it'll be homework. I'll put some more data for you. So homework for you is just play with this exercise. Okay, just it wouldn't take much time. And another one I would recommend, I'll push it here, okay? Is I say Ruby in 15 minutes. Like there's two things. The Ruby in 15 minutes, there's two options. Just put in search like Ruby in 15 minutes and try ruby.org. So I think, okay, let's see. Those guys were quiet, sorry guys. There's in 20 minutes. So just go ahead with this locally and just follow these steps. Okay? Pretty much similar, but they have like more advanced stuff as you go, and like it's a mod, and they have some other kind of even two classes. Okay? They introduce some functions also. So actually I think it's maybe in 20 minutes, just put it this way. I think another good site is Ruby Monk. Let's see if it's still there. Yeah. I think it's yeah, I have some issues for this. I'm not sure why is it if you change it some. But Ruby Monk is very nice. Okay. Okay. Let's start with this guy. So Ruby Monk actually is a nice site. You just need to update certificate, I think. It's a really nice site. It gives you like from scratch to learn Ruby very well. It has like beginner, medium, advanced, and it's really like interactive. But they need to update their certificate. For now, I think this will be good enough for your homework. So play with remaining steps for string and integer, number one. And go through this exercise within 20 minutes, number two. Questions? When? Thursday. So you're gonna have Monday and Thursday. Just last week it just had exception, but starting this week it's going to be Monday and Thursday.